The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning. Chodesh Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Chodesh Tov. This just seems to be so much to talk about. Difficult to always get the right things, choose the right bits and pieces from what's going on in the news. But I did want to share this piece with you before talking about some of the events overnight and yesterday. The deputy chief of the IDF unit H200, which in Hebrew is known as Shmonematayim, and is a very, very well-known unit, intelligence unit within the IDF, which produces many, many people who go on to amazing careers in Israeli industry in general. But generally speaking, the people in Shmonematayim are kind of low-key. They don't say a lot. They just get on and do their job. Don't make many public statements. But in this particular case, Colonel Yu, because of course we're not allowed to know exactly who he is in the public eye, has talked about some of the cyber attacks that have taken place that Israel has managed to intercept, not only on behalf of Israel, but indeed on this particular occasion, on behalf of the United States, where apparently there was an attack that was going to potentially damage the U.S. power grid and U.S. power plants in general, and that apparently soldiers from Shmonematayim were the ones who picked up the cyber attack that was due to take place and warned their American counterparts in order to allow them to take evasive action against this or defensive action against it. But not for the first time, because in fact, one of the most well-known examples of Israel intervening on behalf of the United States was when they warned the US about the Kaspersky antivirus software, which is a Russian antivirus software, which apparently in 2017 was being used as a way to backdoor spy on U.S. systems and to plant malware on U.S. systems. And the warning came from Shmonematayim to the United States that this was about to take place. This was the issue. And also, at a time that Israel had actually picked up the fact that Iran was trying to attack water facilities in Israel and was actually trying to create a situation where the water supply in Israel would be poisoned in order to literally kill people who drank that water. And during that same period of time, that is when Shmonematayim came across this attempt to attack the U.S. power plants and, of course, warned the American counterparts that this was taking place. So some, just some interesting insight into some of the work that's being done under the covers by Unit Shmonematayim, the Unit A200. It's very, very unusual for them to make statements, certainly by serving officers. So this is regarded as something quite out of the ordinary.
Absolutely fascinating. Terrible story was a shooting incident at Joseph's tomb last night that has left three Israelis lightly injured. And I was talking about the story a little bit earlier and thinking, you know, can you imagine if this story was the other way around? And I'm not saying that that's the only part of the story, but we really are only seeing this right now in the Israeli press, nowhere else.
That's true. And this is Joseph Tomb, which, of course, is situated right in Shechem, in Nablus, and therefore is a highly controversial location for Israelis to visit because it's right within the Palestinian Authority area. And the IDF has as its job, or one of its jobs, to facilitate people visiting Joseph's Tomb to pray there from time to time. This is a regular event that goes on all the time. The way that it's usually done is that people are allowed to come in, Jews are allowed to come in to pray there in the middle of the night. It's not usually done during daytime hours. The IDF first clears a secure passage to the tomb, then ushers those people who wish to pray there into the tomb. They give them a certain amount of time to do whatever they wish to do, their prayers, whatever is required, whatever is desired at the tomb. And then they are carefully ushered out through the safe passage back to safety again. That's a regular occurrence that takes place around the area of Joseph's tomb. Last night was no different. This was actually being undertaken under the personal guidance of the IDF Samaria Regional Brigade Commander, Colonel Roy Zweig. He was personally conducting the security at the place when all of a sudden armed terrorists apparently opened heavy fire against the tomb's complex. So what they did was they just simply started to fire towards the area of Joseph's tomb. We're told that soldiers asked the worshippers in the compound to turn lights out in order to try to somehow create to avoid having an easier target for those people who were shooting towards the tomb. In the process of all of this, Colonel Zweig and two other civilians were lightly injured by gunfire. The story says that Colonel Roy Zweig did not seek any medical treatment at all, even after he'd been shot, but rather chose to oversee the evacuation of all the worshippers from the area of the tomb before he himself sought medical attention for the gunshot wound that he had received during the course of that incident. So the good news is that everybody is okay, even though those three people were injured, lightly injured. And another story of heroic conduct by soldiers of the IDF, and in particular Colonel Zweig, who is a regional brigade commander anyway, and obviously has proven himself before, but once again stood up and really did what is required in order to protect Israeli civilians.
Amazing. Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has announced that he will not be standing in the next election. So do we know why he took this decision?
I just wonder whether he's not worn out after a year of being prime minister and having to deal with so many different parties within his coalition government. And now, of course, effectively deciding that he cannot continue to rule the country because he doesn't have the support of his own governing coalition. We are told that this is not over and out for Naftali Bennett, but simply a break, so that he may well choose to return to political life in the future. But at least for now, it is official that he will not be on Yamina's list. He will not lead the Yamina party, which he and Ayelet Shaked have led together up until now, and that Ayelet Shaked will take over from him as leader of Yamina. And I think it's going to be an interesting journey for Ayelet Shaked, because the current situation is that even though the government was due, the Knesset was due to have passed a dissolution bill on Monday, and then they were due to have passed the dissolution bill yesterday, as we sit here today, the Knesset is still not dissolved. And the reason that the Knesset is not dissolved is because there is a lot of bargaining going on, trading going on, about the dissolution bill itself. We know that the governing coalition would very much like to pass a few new laws through bills through the Knesset in order just to allow things to continue on during this period of election. The one we spoke about yesterday, which is the law to facilitate the visa waiver program with the United States. Another law that needs to go through the Knesset fairly urgently is the so-called Metro Bill, the Tel Aviv Metro Bill, which will facilitate the setting up of the Tel Aviv Metro system, which is a really, really important infrastructure project for residents of Tel Aviv and residents of the State of Israel in general. And this is really all about helping the country to keep moving while the Knesset is not in session. So this bill really needs to pass before the Knesset dissolves. But the Likud is not willing to support these two very, very important bills, which is really for the general good of the State of Israel, because they have two things that they need in order to help the Likud along the way. The one is to reverse the ruling against Amichai Chikli, who has been declared a renegade from Yamina after crossing the floor. And as a result of that, he is unable to stand for the Likud in the next election. So the Likud is saying they want him to be reinstated so that he can potentially run as a Haver Knesset, as a part of the Likud list in the next Knesset. They want that to be done. And the next thing that they want to ensure is that the election takes place on the 25th of October rather than the first week of November, because they feel that it would be advantageous to the Likud and to the Likud's potential coalition partners, simply because the yeshiva students are only due to return back to yeshiva studies after the 25th of October, after the Chagim, and therefore they feel that if the election is held before the yeshiva students return to the yeshiva, then they will be liable to vote, to come out to vote more easily, and therefore Likud and the coalition partners will get more support from the yeshiva students if they're not yet back in the yeshiva programs. And so the Likud is very determined to make the election that 1 week earlier. Now, the Central Election Commission has already decided that the 25th of October is not an option for the election, and that the election will need to take place in the first week of November. But the Likud are not agreeing with that, and they are not willing to accept that particular ruling, and they are insistent that they are not going to support a dissolution bill unless those two particular aspects
so
are
Israel
included.
Can't even at this point agree to not have a government.
It's just crazy, because the weirdest thing is that these two things are really for the personal gain of the Likud. Nobody else is gaining from it except the Likud. And they will not support the dissolution bill, and they will not support things which the state of Israel really needs. So the other things that are required, like the visa waiver program and the Tel Aviv Metro, have no advantage to any particular political party. They are advantage to the general public. Mm. But the Likud won't support that until they get their own personal piece of the pie, until they get what's really good for them. So coming back to the story about Ayelet Shaked leading Yamina into the next election, one of the most interesting and most controversial decisions that she may need to make post the next election is whether Yamina is willing to come into a coalition which is led by former Prime Minister Netanyahu, because the opinion polls currently suggest that if those five seats which Yamina are expected to get in the next election are joined to the rest of the coalition partners that the Likud naturally would seek, then they could potentially be a government. So Ayelet Shaked might need to decide whether she would support somebody who she really doesn't support on a personal level, but whose policies potentially are very much in line with her own policies on the right wing of the political spectrum. And knowing that if she does support him, that the state of Israel would be better off for having a government rather than having to return to a whole further series of elections. But knowing that in supporting him, she supports somebody who behaves in this particular way that we're seeing today, where they're not willing to support a dissolution bill unless the Likud's personal gain is insured.
So a message from Yair, who says, Anthony, I know you don't like Likud, but it's not just the Likud. The date for the election is also for Shas and UTJ. Your thoughts on that?
True, but the point is, by the way, Yair, it's not that I don't like the Likud at all. It's not really about that. I just have some issues with personal behaviors which are to the benefit of individuals and individual political parties rather than for the general benefit of the people of Israel, because I want people out there to represent us, to really represent us and not to represent themselves and their own personal gain. Having said that, of course UTJ and Shas will benefit from this, but let's not forget that UTJ and Shas are very important coalition partners in order to get former Prime Minister Netanyahu back into office. Without their support, he will not be Prime Minister. So, of course, he's supporting the cause because he knows that ultimately it will support his cause.
Right. Very, very interesting. Charles says Likud has become bad for Israel under Netanyahu. And it does seem as though, I mean, you know, and it does seem as though there is an element of entitlement that is coming across from the Likud.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Likud, as we knew it in the days of Menachem Begin and, you know, those times, was a much more genuine party than the one that we see today. And let's not forget that there are so many people scattered across the political spectrum who are former Likudnikim, who really are dyed-in-the-wool Likud supporters, really support everything that the Likud stands for, but simply don't support the current Likud leadership. And I think that that's a comment that can be made about so many people who really do support the Likud, but don't somehow wish to support the current Likud leadership because they feel that it doesn't represent the state of Israel and rather represents themselves.
Yeah, so it is an interesting one, and it's a time of heightened emotion, as it would be, because we've got this dissolution of government, which is not even happening, and it just shows that everything gets very, very stuck. We don't have a lot of time, but a video has been released showing Israeli civilian Hisham al-Sayed in Gaza. How did the public respond to this?
So this is, of course, a continuation from the story that we discussed the day before yesterday, where Hamas advertised that one of the Israeli civilians in Gaza has deteriorated from a health point of view. And then the following day, they released this video showing Hisham al-Sayed, who, of course, is the Bedouin who has apparently suffers from mental health illnesses and has made his own way into Gaza and has then since for the last 6 years, essentially, been captive in Gaza under Hamas. They showed him with an oxygen mask on, lying in bed, not looking particularly healthy. And also, of course, in the old days when people were in captivity, they used to take photographs of them with the current day's newspaper. Now that we don't have daily newspapers where people can show that it's an up-to-date picture, what they did was they had a TV in the background showing events of the day, which clearly show that it was a very, very current video because of the events of the day that were going on the television in the background. And it was interesting to see also that Hamas have come up saying they are willing to exchange Hisham al-Sayed, who clearly is not in good health, for Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails who are also not in good health. That was the way that they positioned the potential prisoner exchange. The Israeli government was very quick to reject that, saying that any prisoner exchange will need to involve all Israelis, including the bodies of the two IDF soldiers who are still which are still being held in Gaza. So that was a very, very easy decision, apparently, by Prime Minister Naftali Bennett and Yair Lapid, incoming Prime Minister, whenever that happens, perhaps today. Incoming Prime Minister Yair Lapid, they rejected that right away. But what was interesting for me is the response of the Palestinian public, because apparently they had been told that these people being held in Gaza were actually Jewish Israeli soldiers. And so many of them have come up saying, hey, he's actually a Muslim. How come we were told that he's a Jewish Israeli soldier? There is no value in holding one of our own people captive against the Israeli government. So a lot of surprise from the Palestinian street about this video, and really apparently having brought Hamas into some disrepute in terms of the way that the general public are looking at them now, having misled them to believe that he actually was a Jewish Israeli soldier rather than a Bedouin, Muslim Bedouin, being held captive by Hamas.
Absolutely fascinating. It is 8:01. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. Wishing you a fantastic weekend, a Shabbat Shalom, and we'll catch you on Monday morning at 7:45.